CliffCentral.com.
All right. It is Tuesday morning, CliffCentral.com, and we are live. You've got me and Mash to keep you company this morning. Lebang is either moving house or having a baby or both as we speak. And we got lots of other cool stuff heading your way. That was quite interesting to speak to Dr. Brianna Fox from Descent of a Serial Killer, which is coming to you for the whole of this month, just in case you needed more crime and craziness in your life. I mean, a lot of people, they love this stuff, man. They just love the serial killer stuff, the crazy people stuff, the true crime stories. It's the most popular genre in podcasting, and it is the most popular stuff on TV by a long way. So everybody, even though we've got plenty of crime in the real world of South Africa, clearly a lot of people don't get enough of that. They want to see it on the screen as well. So I'm not going to say anything. It's not my favorite thing. It's not something I watch a lot of, but I know lots of people who do. And I'm not saying you're crazy. I'm not saying you're asking for trouble. But there's some of that stuff that's too freaky for me that I don't actually want to see. I would prefer to remain in ignorant bliss.
Oh, we love to see it. We love to see. I'm one of the people you're describing.
I knew you were. Let me quickly tell you about the myth of innovation is that brilliant ideas leap fully formed from the minds of geniuses. We know this is not true. On this week's episode of Leadership Books Unpacked, Manda Tsifularo and Ngobile Ngobo have unpacked Change by Design, how design thinking transforms organizations and inspires innovation. It's a book by Tim Brown. And it's also an audiobook for creative leaders seeking to infuse design thinking into every level of an organization, whether it's a product or a service or driving new alternatives for business and society. So make sure you listen to Leadership Books Unpacked wherever you get your podcasts. It's proudly sponsored by Hollard Life Insurance and by Superlead. So big round of applause to Hollard Life Solutions and to Superlead for making it possible. Otherwise, you'd have to actually read the whole book from cover to cover yourself. This gives you the most important salient information, and you get to hear it all in one beautiful episode. That's Leadership Books Unpacked, and that's brought to you by Hollard Life Solutions and Superlead. Don't miss it. Go and check it out on our podcast list or on any of the podcast servers, wherever you get them. All right, so we are live this morning. We've got quite a lot of stuff to get to. We're also going to be joined in a short while by somebody who I think you're going to find very, very interesting. The co-CEO of Clockwork is a guy called Nick Simmons. We're going to talk to him about creating work and creating jobs and helping to grow the economy, which is something we should be very, very interested in this country because God knows we need it. So all of that's coming up in probably the next half an hour. Don't go too far away from that. So why do you think, Mash, that you and so many other people are so interested in this true crime stuff? I mean, is it just a fascination with like the most extreme kinds of people? Is it because you are secretly scared that the next door neighbor might be a serial killer? I'm trying to figure it out because I don't have the same level of fascination and interest that you do.
I think, first of all, it is really about just finding the most far-fetched version of reality. For example, for me, personally, it's so far-fetched. Some of the stories I hear, some of the stories I like seeing are just so ridiculous. So for me, it's so disconnected from my reality that it's something I'm so eager to actually delve into whenever I get the chance. And it's also a bit of looking for the warning signs because you never know who a serial killer could be. And it's not just limited to killers, of course. I mean, I listen to all kinds of crime podcasts about scammers, about swindlers, about fraudsters. I mean, there's all kinds of crime. There's white collar, pink collar. There's so many different types of crime. So it's mostly about just being able to identify the red flags and just also disconnecting from your own life a bit, because some of these stories make you realize that, wow, I'm actually living kind of soft. I'm actually living a very like soft core lifestyle.
That, well, you know, a lot of people are saying that you are going to end up being on one of those true crime podcasts if you move in with that person you've been with. You got to look out because that's a distinct possibility. Just for those of you who just joined us and didn't hear the first part of the show, Mash went on two dates with somebody and he's actually considering moving in with them, which is madness. I mean, that's like one of the most crazy things I've ever heard, even though it may just be because this person is very rich and has a nice house that Mash was complaining, you know, is much cleaner than the house he currently shares with his roommate. I still think you go there, you're going to end up in a body bag, dude. Don't do it.
Oh, Gareth, I'd rather be in a body bag in a mansion.
Oh, come on. You don't want to be in a body bag full. Jesus, that's terrifying. There are a couple of comments here about the other interview, which you may or may not have heard. Snae says, I watched your interview with Erica and Kelimpilo last night. It gave me nightmares. I felt so guilty listening to those ladies because I have a 4.5 liter Aquila sparkling water in my cupboard. So let me just explain what that's all about. So I interviewed these two women. They actually feature in a News 24 podcast, which won a couple of awards. They were both members of essentially a cult, Kwasiza Bantu in KwaZulu-Natal. And this cult has been operating for years now, since the 80s. It's a very, very strange story. It's an amazing story. I mean, if you like the idea of serial killers, you'll be just as interested in the story of a cult. And worth hearing the stories of these two women and what they went through and how they eventually got out and how these cults work. I mean, it's just absolutely mind-blowing what smart, intelligent, well-adjusted people can end up being convinced of by, you know, religious leaders, people who promise you the world, people who are punishing you for things that you didn't even do. I mean, the kind of really quite savage things that these two women were exposed to during their time at Kwasiza Bantu is worth listening to. And both of them managed to get out alive, but they're both, you know, there's a fair amount of damage there. And it's really, really interesting to hear their point of view. If you are fascinated by cults, if you are one of those people who just wants to know more about how it all works, how people can be talked into it, convinced of what's right and wrong, these two ladies were obviously taken in at a very young age and put there by their families. And you wonder to yourself, like, what kind of parent would willingly put their children into a place like this and just leave them there? Which is kind of what happened to Kelimpilo anyway. To Erica, her whole family went there as well. Her dad died when she was quite young. The rest of the family moved in there. And they all became members of this cult. I think some of them still are in her case. And you have to ask yourself, like, how do you get to the point where this is what you're prepared to do to your family? It's really amazing. You can hear the whole interview. Just go to cliffcentral.com and you can listen to all of it or watch it on YouTube if you prefer. You know, we try to do both. And you can tell us what you think about it too. I want to hear all about it. You can drop us a comment in the comment section now, or you can send us an email if you're not listening live. Parallel Parking says, I told my friends I was going to marry a person I just met for 20 minutes right after meeting her. We were very happily married for 7 years. So it does happen.
Oh, see?
Okay.
See?
Oh, all right.
There are happy endings to this. It doesn't always end in murder.
All right. But I think the chances are very slim. I'm sorry, Mash. I don't want to spoil your dreams and your hopes and your ambitions of living in a mansion or having an incredible life with someone who you've only been on two dates with and who's already asked you to move in. But it does sound a bit fishy to me. And I don't think you want to put all your eggs in one basket. Plus, if it doesn't go well, like I said earlier, what's going to happen? You're going to be kicked out. You're going to be homeless, basically. Then you have to go and beg your now very angry roommate if you can move back in again.
I just have to make a pancake. She'll be fine.
Oh, really? Is that all it takes?
That's all it takes. I just tell her, listen, I'll cook. She'll be cool. I can come back.
Man. No, I'm very nervous for you. Well, at least go on two more dates and at least spend one night there before you decide to move in. Then you can do a weekend. Take it in baby steps. Because this person might not be crazy, but they might not be everything that you think they are. You know, the problem with people is also the first date's easy because, you know, you put your best foot forward and you think carefully about what you want to say and what you want to reveal. And then that person is also, it's the game of getting to know each other. It's all very exciting and sexy and, you know, like the emotions are running high and you've got that excitement and that nervousness and the adrenaline. Second date is more of a, like, let's get to know each other. Maybe in the second date, you even meet some of the people in that person's life later on. You talk a little bit more about each other. You ask all the questions that you had left over from the first date. By the third one, you start to see one or two of the things that may not be the best foot forward stuff. Then it's more honest, more real. I reckon you got to go on a few dates before you figure someone out. I don't know if I'm the only one or if that's very old school, but I reckon a few dates before you start getting too comfortable with somebody.
No, absolutely. I'll go on at least two or three more before I actually come to a decision. And maybe we might even change our minds in the process.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good idea. Just take it slow. There's no need to rush this. MM says, I still don't understand how the parents didn't know. Chilling story. Now, I don't know whether MM's referring to the situation with the Shabin, the tavern over the weekend, or whether you're referring to the cult interview, because both, it's extraordinary, like, how derelict these parents are. They just don't have any sense of duty towards their children in both cases. It's scary. You know, one of the reasons I haven't had children is because I would be terrified to not do the best job possible, because you get one shot with raising a kid. And if you raise a horrible kid, you're making that everyone in society's problem. You're making it everybody else's issue to deal with. And in the case of these kids who died in the Shabin, it's just terrible. It's really, really desperately disappointing and very, very sad. And I can't help thinking that, you know, there's a whole generation of kids who are now damaged. The ones who survived, let alone the ones who are dead, obviously they're gone. But I just wonder how those other kids who knew them are going to feel. This is a story that they're now part of. It's very, very scary. Don't like it at all. As for the cults, that cult continues to operate in KZN, by the way. They're still there and they are still running. And the guy who started it is still alive, even though he's on death's door by the sound of things. He's not doing well. But listen to the interview and tell me what you think. It doesn't always end in murder isn't a good argument, says Chris. No, that's a good idea.
But also, Gareth,
MM was referring to the cult interview. I listened to the interview twice. Yeah, well,
sure.
I mean, I think Kalim Pilo was about 8 or 9 years old, and the same for Erica when their parents took them to this mission. They thought it was a good place for the kids to learn morals and learn good lessons and be around good people and be raised in a good Christian way. So the parents were sold a bill of goods. And I mean, sure, you have to take care to figure out exactly what's going on there. You can't just drop your kids off and see them in a year's time or whatever. But I don't think the parents necessarily had nefarious intent. I think that they thought that this would be the best thing for their kids. Who knows?
Yeah, you never. And even if they knew what is happening there, in some cases, people are just so brainwashed to a point where they know what's happening, and to them, that's the right thing. Yeah. Sure.
Absolutely.
Terrifying.
Marianne says, when you marry for money, you will work for every rand for the rest of your married life. I think that's a good point. I think there are a lot of people who marry for money and then they don't realize that every step of the way, they're going to be paying for that. They're going to either have to put out the whole time, which, I mean, it sounds funny and ridiculous, but I'm sure that there are so many men and women who married for money, mostly women, who every time they have to have sex with that guy, they're like, ugh, this is not worth it. And maybe they have to spend a huge fortune the next day to feel better about themselves. But having to sleep with someone that you don't want to sleep with must be one of the most terrible things that can happen to a person. I can't imagine anything worse. And I don't think I'm much of a prize, but let me tell you, if I can't choose the people I'm going to be sleeping with, that's going to make me instantly depressed and unhappy. So that's a good point. Also, you know why divorce is so expensive, Mash?
Why is it expensive?
Because it's worth it. So when people get divorced and they have to pay their ex-husband or ex-wife to get as far away from them as possible. The reason that they do is because it's worth it. You, once you've come out of a relationship that didn't work and you don't want to see that person again, the usual situation is that those people stay away from each other as much as possible. And part of it is the settlement of the money so that you don't have to have dealings with that person again. So that's a good point too. Mash, this person isn't a priest by any chance, this person who you have, you're thinking about going on another date with. No?
No, they're not a priest. They're not a priest at all. Okay. I can't disclose what they do, but they're not a priest.
All right. Very good. Someone says financial prostitute, because that's what a lot of people are saying. I mean, listen, what's the difference between that and a blesser and a blessee, you know?
Absolutely.
I'm not saying...
Well,
nothing.
Well, there is quite a difference, because with blesses and blessees and all of that, you're just exchangeable. You're in this week, you're out next week, you know, as opposed to an actual relationship where two people actually do like each other.
I hope it is that. I mean, we're not talking about your situation necessarily, but there are a lot of people who think they're in a relationship when they're really in a transaction. Steve E. says, ask Charlene, that's Princess Charlene of Monaco, how it feels. Oh, yeah. See, now she is married to a prince. She's got all of this money. She lives in a palace. People call her Your Royal Highness. It's amazing. Your Serene Highness or whatever it is. She has this supposedly great life, and you've never seen anyone so unhappy, right? She's just, she couldn't be more miserable. She doesn't want to be around the man at all. She seems to be trying to get away from the media the whole time. It doesn't look like she's got a very happy life. I mean, she came in and stayed in South Africa for like a year where she didn't see her husband and kids because she didn't want to be around him for whatever reason. Or if we're just speculating, maybe she just wants to be on her own. Maybe it's not that she has a problem with him, or she doesn't necessarily want to spend the time with her kids. Maybe that's not true. Maybe she just wants to be on her own. In either case, she's married to this guy and she's probably not very happy.
I mean, in some cases, space does actually make a relationship stronger. Being around each other all the time can be so exhausting.
Well, that's that. Okay, I want to just ask a question or two about this, because I hear this a lot from people about the distance and the space making a relationship stronger. I've never been in a long distance. I've been in long term. I haven't been in a long distance relationship. I don't know how that works. If you're not physically around the person, is it really even a relationship?
I don't consider it a relationship. If someone's far away, it's automatically not a relationship anymore. You guys are just playing open house, because it's just a thing of that. It's not about the physical contact. It's about just seeing someone. Yeah. It's about just seeing someone. If you're not if we're not seeing each other for extended periods of time, I mean, we could actually find that interaction elsewhere. It'll be much easier to get it elsewhere. One person just looks at you the right way or just talks to you in a certain way, and you're already like, huh, maybe I might just leave this person.
All right, but you said just now that that a bit of space can make a relationship stronger. So are you going against your own position there, or are you talking about space not as an actual distance, but like being having your own interests, doing your own thing?
Yes, I mean space as in like, having your own thing, having, like during the day, we're not seeing each other all day long. You know, for example, imagine working with someone, being with someone that you work with, you live with, everything, the whole day you're just together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that can be absolutely overwhelming.
Let me put it this way then. I know a couple, they work together, they live together, and they have two kids. They are basically in each other's lives 24/7. I can't say whether it's working really well or whether it's going badly, but that sounds to me like it's a little bit too much, too close, too much of the time. I think you have to have a bit of space.
You need space. It's vital. I mean, okay, once kids are involved, it's a bit different, because kids can be a bit of a distraction. you know, because you're not all eyes on each other. You're not all in each other's faces all the time. The kids do give you a bit of a break from each other. You have to take them to school. You can go to the grocery shops with the kids. You have to keep the kids busy. You can take them roller skating or something. So it does give you a bit of a distraction. But if it's just the two of us and we're in each other's faces all the time, my thing is also I get bored quickly. So it won't last.
Yeah, I get bored quickly, but I think it's really important that people have to also have their own interests, right? So if you're in a relationship and you're constantly doing stuff together and you don't have your own things and she or he doesn't have their own things, I don't know that that's sustainable in the long term, because you know how people, you need your alone time. Sometimes you also need your alone things, like whether it's your hobbies, whether it's a book you like to read, whether it's spending a bit of time on your own. If everything is always totally around that other person, I know people who are like that, and they seem to me to be very happy. I'm willing to accept that I might be missing something here, but I think a bit of space is a really good idea. And being able to do your own things is a massively important thing too. These couples where they do absolutely everything together, they even have the joint Facebook account and the joint Instagram account. That just screams to me that there are big problems going on. Someone has obviously cheated if you have a joint account, because there's no other reason to have that.
There's no reason at all. It's like these couples who actually do everything together on social media as well. So apart from the joint accounts, they even start a joint YouTube. And it's a thing of, once the relationship ends, what happens to all of these? Because also these accounts gain tons of followers. These accounts end up with hundreds of thousands of followers. They're making money from these accounts. This turns into a business at some point. And now when they break up, they must close everything down and go start over somewhere.
Also, these joint accounts are weird, because if you are messaging the wife because she's your friend and then the husband's reading it, you're like, you can't really joke about certain things because he might not know what you're talking about. If your friend is the husband, then you know that the wife is like snooping on it. It's kind of weird. It's not like you're hiding secrets or anything here. It's more like you can only have a relationship of a particular kind with one person. You don't have a relationship with a couple. Which is strange. So if the one is your friend and the other one is just their partner, it doesn't make it easy. You don't know if you're talking on this Facebook account to the one or the other. You're not even sure who's replying.
Yeah. And I also think that it's okay to actually have those jokes and you know, to also talk about your partner amongst your friends. I mean, for example, I do have a friend who actually, her boyfriend loves painting. He's always painting. He paints everything. He painted their whole house. He painted the driveway. He painted it like with lines and stripes and all that kind of stuff. I mean, whenever I get to a house, I'm just like, geez, your house looks like a testing course, a K53 testing course, because this guy's just painting everywhere. And we love joking about such things. But now if they're sharing a social media account, I can't joke to her about that. You know, we gave her boyfriend a nickname. No. We call him K53 now. You know, we give him a little nickname. It's fun, it's jokes, but obviously she still loves him. You know, she entertains these jokes, but she still loves him. So if they're sharing an account, we can't even make these jokes anymore.
Jesse says, my girlfriend and I nearly saw each other every day for the last 7 years. I don't know if there'll be an eighth. See, there's some honesty. Thank you, Jesse, for being honest, because a lot of girlfriend people wouldn't say that. I hope she isn't, but I thank him for his honesty, because that's how it goes. If it's, you know, too much, if you're in each other's face the whole time, not a good idea. Joint Facebook accounts. It's usually the wife's way of keeping tabs on her partner, just in case someone from the past slips into the DMs. Maybe that's what it is. Again, I've never had a joint Facebook or Instagram account with anybody, so I wouldn't know what that's like. I wouldn't have any idea. Also, you know, oversharing is just usually as unhealthy as not sharing anything at all. If you're sharing absolutely everything, you know, like these couples who have, you know, one of them will be on the toilet while the other one's brushing their teeth in the morning. Like, I think I never want to be that comfortable with anybody ever. To me, that is the opposite of sexy. And if you're like, taking a shit while someone else is brushing their teeth. I don't ever see that as a good thing. To me, that's just terrible. Yeah. Jared says, I've been married for 7 years and I've been with my wife for 16 years. We have separate bank accounts and we split the bill for rent and utilities. Well, hey, if you've been together 16 years, that's phenomenal. Then maybe you've got a point. I'm not going to criticize that. And anyone who wants to, they better have more than 16 years with their person.
Mm. Wow. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. That is crazy. I see here.
Yes. Mm.
I see here, Tahleho says joint account. I know a couple who gets paid into the same account. I can't even swipe for my adult toys or strip club entrance fee.
Oh, man. Yeah. This is very tough. Gary says joint Facebook accounts, proof the guy's balls have been transferred into his wife's handbag. Wow. Oh, man. There's no guidebook to the perfect relationship, and it depends so much on the people. One of my friends is very happily married, and the two of them have completely different interests. They do completely different things with their time. They love each other when they're with each other, but they give each other quite a lot of space. And then, as I said, there's this other couple I know who work together. They are busy raising two kids, and they spend all of their time together. The office is their house. Their house is their office. Ooh. There's no place that they can go where they have their own space from each other. And somehow, it seems that works for them too. So, different strokes, hey?
Different strokes. Yeah. Different strokes.
A lot of people talking about this joint social media thing. XS says, joint social media? What? That's crazy. Neither extremes are healthy. A good relationship is about balance. The closer you are to the middle, the better. I think we'll leave it at that because we are ready to talk to Nick Simmons, who's the co-CEO of Clockwork. Now, Clockwork is a full-service independent agency with branches in Johannesburg, Cape Town, and in the UK. Now, they have a youth mentorship program, which is called Growth Lab, and that's what we want to talk to Nick about this morning. Growth Lab celebrates its first successful year this youth month as the agency's primary internal junior leadership forum. Growth Lab has 20 junior staff who are under the personal guidance of their EXCO committee, and it was specifically created and designed to actively put younger people on a path to self-improvement while enjoying purpose-driven careers. We talk often in this country about how nobody's really helping young people to get ahead. They're not creating opportunities. We have massive unemployment in this country. And I thought it might be fun to find out from Nick how they do it, because it may be something that you want to do in your business. It may be something that you want to ask your boss to do if you work at a certain company. It may be something that we could all learn from. So I'm going to welcome him to the show now. Nick, how are you?
Morning, Gareth. Good. How are you?
Good. I was just explaining to Mash and to everybody who's listening what you guys do at Clockwork. Explain to everybody in your own words what Growth Lab is. And tell us, and by the way, congratulations on your first successful year. Tell us what Growth Lab is and what you've done in the last year.
Sure. Thanks, Gareth. Yeah. Growth Lab came about sort of in early 2020. My founding partner of the business and I were sitting, reflecting on what the strategic goals and projects for 2021 were going to be. And in the conversation, we sort of realized that we had developed like various really exciting leadership and management platforms for senior and mid-level staff to learn and grow from. But there was a gap that we weren't providing something similar for our junior staff, which is obviously counterintuitive because they, ostensibly have the most to learn and have the most potential for growth in the business. So we sort of brainstormed the idea and came up with the concept of Growth Lab, which is sort of in many ways an autonomous self-managed and self-run group of our junior staff. So it's normally people in the first sort of 3 to 5 years of their careers. And I work with them pretty closely and we sort of seek out topics and concepts and ideas to unpack together. And I just try and support it and encourage it and give it some sort of guidance where possible. Kind of the main thing about it is giving them an opportunity to lead something. Because I think often the growth comes from just doing and being given a platform to sort of, you know, take charge and speak. So that's kind of loosely how I would describe it, I guess. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Well, I mean, you mentioned a couple of things here, and I'm going to let Mash ask some questions because he sounds like a prime candidate for this kind of mentorship. And I get emails from people all the time about, like, can you mentor me? I don't know what the hell that means. I'm not going to pretend I understand it, Nick. But when you talk about junior staff, this is what gets me excited. You know, everybody's got management training courses, and they will send away their top level people to, you know, to do skills improvement or to learn some new thing or to go to some big conference or whatever. The junior staff just get kind of forced to keep on keeping the wheels turning. And in many companies, that's pretty much the way it goes until they eventually leave or they decide that that it's time for them to make a move either within or without of the company. How come there's such an emphasis on the top people and not on the bottom people when some of those people at the lower levels of an organization might end up being exactly the leaders that we need in the future? We just don't explore their potential.
Yeah, interesting question. I think part of the answer is that it's sort of self-determining. So the people making the decisions about who gets to do all those cool things are generally the senior people, and they tend to make those decisions in a way that benefits themselves, I guess. That's the cynical answer. But also, I think it's always been done like this things. So people who, you know, people sort of reflect what they saw early on in their careers. And we come from environments where that's always just sort of been the case. Juniors fit in and kind of have to try and learn by osmosis. And then, you know, when you get more senior in your career, companies tend to maybe think we can invest more seriously in opportunities for you to learn and grow in senior management. Maybe it's an idea that those people are more valuable because they have more experience. So, you know, let's capitalize on that value by amplifying it with further training and stuff. And what gets left behind is all the juniors who have, like, you know, normally the most appetite for growth, who are left largely to figure things out for themselves, which also I don't think is necessarily the worst thing. There's good things that come with that. So it's about finding a balance between, you know, not necessarily spoon feeding and hand holding, but also providing opportunities to do cool stuff and be part of more interesting conversations around how we grow and sort of learn as leaders and managers and stuff.
Well, we've got a big problem in South Africa because we've got huge unemployment and we've got masses of people who have probably got incredible skills, who've got an enormous appetite to succeed and who just need to be given the chance. So how do you think we can deal with A, the unemployment problem, and B, the leadership vacuum in South Africa? Because these are the big questions that even the politicians are frightened to answer. I'm going to make it difficult for you by saying you've been doing this a year, seems to be working. What lessons do you think could be writ large for the whole country?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I would hate to be trying to answer those questions. They're huge existential dilemmas that we face as a country and a planet today. But I guess what I can offer from what I have seen is that giving young people an opportunity to learn and grow, and importantly to embrace a growth mindset, yields really, really clear and measurable, feelable differences. More so, I'd say, not to throw shade at sort of senior people who I've worked at, but just giving small amounts of time and investment seems to get returned, you know, many times over by juniors who I see run with it and grow and flourish. So I guess maybe for me, what the answer to that question would be, and it's cheesy, but a little does go quite a long way with juniors who are, you know, have the appetite for pouncing on things and growing. I mean, not everyone junior in the staff is in Growth Lab. It's fully like an optional opt-in thing, and that's very much part of the spirit. So the first thing is, like, people have to want it. So you got to work with people who want to do this sort of thing and want to invest in the growth and do the extra work and learn and grow. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, from there, it's just about creating frameworks and, you know, programs and conversations. And I think often it's also just about letting people that are, you know, younger people in you know, companies and possibly society at large know that their voices count, their views count, and they matter. And that we're here to engage with them. Often, like, senior people in companies and countries and societies, I guess, sort of there seems to be a sense of not wanting to necessarily engage with the youth in an authentic, meaningful way. Often it's sort of window dressing or lip service, or it's part of a political strategy. So I think, you know, actually engaging with young people in terms of what is important to them, what do they want, how do you guys want to do this, let's work together, and giving them the autonomy and the control, and giving them some of the power that, you know, you normally are used to controlling as a senior stakeholder in a business, and you know, seeing what they do with it, with a bit of good guidance, some good direction, suggestions, and ideas, you know, creative sparks fly, and we see really cool stuff happening. And for me, the most rewarding thing has been watching the conversations come alive, watching people who, you know, you hadn't heard really ever speak, because young people don't really get the opportunities to speak in rooms, and they often sort of are shy and timid. So one of the rules is you kind of have to speak in Growth Lab. We've been doing the thing 100% virtually since we launched it sort of toward the beginning of COVID. So sadly, we've never got to really run a Growth Lab in an office, which we'll look at now because the mask mandate's been dropped and things are a bit different. But how do we get people to step up out of their shells and voice their opinions and bring themselves and their creativity to their positions at work? It's difficult at first, but once you start and you crack that open, you get people talking, it's amazing, because you bring so much, a complex layer of sort of youthful personality comes to the table. And I think every country and society should be excited and want to have that. Don't know if that really answered your question, but it's sort of what I've experienced.
Yeah, that's good. Mash, you've got a couple of things you want to know about here.
Yes, Nick, I love the fact that you use the word engage, because as part of the youth myself, we don't usually hear that. We don't usually hear people saying that they actually want to engage with the youth, because normally it's a case of the youth are just being told what to do. They're just being told to push pencil and not actually get their voices heard. So I actually really love that. And I'd like to find out, are there any specific sectors or skill sets that the Growth Lab program focuses on?
Well, so I'll give you an idea of how it works. So obviously we're in communications and advertising. So our sort of purpose as a business is to help, brands communicate with whoever that is. Normally it's in advertising and, you know, platforms that you guys know well. I mean, media platforms just like this are kind of the things that we look at. So we focus sort of in our space, but it's, you know, I wanted to take the lens of this isn't really about clockwork and it's not really about our industry. It's not really about work. It's about you guys. So how do we cultivate, you know, an authentic desire for growth and learning? And how do we use clockwork and your role here and our Exco and leadership team as a supportive vehicle to help facilitate that? And then what sort of topics do you guys want to talk about? So, you know, we've one of the first topics we unpacked together was basically how to nurture and develop a successful career. This is a question that young people in professional environments are grappling with. I remember that grappling with that question, you know, thinking, how do I get somewhere? How do I become successful? And, you know, what does that look like? And we brainstormed and unpacked a solution together, which turned out to be, well, we have all of these pretty successful people in the company, right? They're our Exco team. We have about 8 Exco who essentially lead the company. Why don't we just bring them in closer to the conversation with you guys and come and present to you all their stories? So our full Exco had to develop a 20-minute presentation, come and present it to all of Growth Lab, have a conversation. And then after that, they could all request to be mentored for 6 months by an Exco member. And then we divided everyone up, and then every Exco member had 3 Growth Lab sort of Growth Labbers to mentor for 6 months. And as a result, you had all these interesting conversations happening across the organization, which never would have happened. You had my partner, the co-CEO, engaging with like a design intern and like, you know, a junior traffic manager sort of thing. People that you maybe look once or twice at and have a passing conversation with now, Exco members are unpacking deep conversations around life and like, you know, philosophical things about what is my purpose and meaning. And also like daily stuff, like, you know, what should I say to my dad who's unhappy with this choice I've made? So, you know, driving those sort of conversations is really, like I said earlier, there's so much to gain with small incremental things, because I think they're so hungry for this sort of thing. So just doing that, like we saw them flourish and grow through it. And there's lots of little stories, you know, those conversations changed the short-term destiny of quite a few people who ended up switching roles, and they ended up sort of moving to different places and doing all sorts of interesting things with their life because they had an older senior person in the organization who had some influence behind them in a conversation and helped move things around and move them forward. So that was really meaningful. Some of the most meaningful things have happened to me in the 10 years of building Clockwork through these conversations and seeing them. So, yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, have you encountered, because the cynical part of me wants to ask, you know, is it always received well? Like, are all the people who work inside of your company and are all the people who come to Growth Lab really doing it because they want to, or are there some who are just feeling like they're forced to do it? Because this happens in every organization. There are always people who over-deliver and are tremendous and are enthusiastic and get involved. There are always one or two who kind of are just doing it because they feel if they don't, they'll get into trouble.
Yeah, I mean, that's a question that kind of does haunt the back of my mind about this because, you know, I'm also relatively a cynic. Yeah, listen, I'm sure there are people who roll their eyes in the background. Who see it as kind of a, you know, another lip service cheesy thing that we're trying to do.
Because let's be serious, Nick, there are a lot of companies in South Africa, especially the bigger corporate ones, who are forced to do like skills improvement and development and all of that stuff. But they're really just ticking the boxes because they don't want to get into trouble. And this is how they get points, you know, so that they can claim they've got this kind of program going on, which gets them certain advantages in the business world, but they don't really care about this stuff, right? So it's okay to be cynical about it sometimes because there is a lot of cynical stuff happening.
Mm. Absolutely. I'm pretty cynical when I see that stuff as well. And I've known friends and I've also, you know, been through things like that. So for me though, I think it was like, listen, people are going to, there's probably going to be an element of that. But, you know, it's outside of what we can control. I can't control what the perception of this thing will be. What I can say is that I have been sort of chastised by people in the company for us not using it enough as a strategic tool. So, you know, it's been going for a year and this is the first time we've ever spoken to anyone externally about it. So I've been told we actually need to use it more in marketing. And I'm like, sure. Or, you know, we need to plug this into our transformation and BE strategy more. And I'm like, yeah, sure. But for me, the core purpose of it is way more important. And I'd rather let the focus of the thing be about growing these like young professionals. And then off that, like, you know, connect in maybe a little bit more intelligently with marketing and with HR and procurement and stuff around how we leverage this in more strategic ways. But you know, I think for me,
can I throw this in quickly, because this is something I've thought of too. You know, sometimes you grow people, and Mash, you can say whether this is your experience too, because you're quite new and you haven't been in the working world for that long, so you're not nearly as cynical yet. But sometimes in a company, you grow people, you give them more and more responsibilities. You groom them to take over, because ultimately the best thing you can do in business is to make yourself replaceable, especially when you're near the top. And then they just go. They take all those skills. They take all that effort. They take all that work, and they move to some other place, and they use the expertise and the experience they've gained with you to help someone else grow their business.
Yeah, I mean, that's happened more times than I like to remember, painfully. I mean, we've seen amazing junior people come in, grow, learn, flourish, and then only to move on because they've learned what they can from you. It's just kind of, you have to take it on the chin and accept it and feel good that you've maybe made, if you have helped someone grow and transform and become better and they've gone somewhere else, on one hand, you're helping your competitors, but on the other hand, you're improving an industry and maybe you're having a tiny impact on society by helping grow people. And so you have to have a little bit more of an altruistic kind of view on it, which is, well, you know, we didn't quite get the long-term one on that, but maybe we made something better. I don't know, but I think you have to, like, you know, dig deep your inner grace and kind of, you know, higher mindedness for those moments. But I mean, there's that famous quote, which is like, I think it's, something along the line, I'm probably going to butcher it, but it's like, you have two options. You either invest or you don't invest in growing your junior staff. Now, the downside of investing is when they leave. On the other hand, what's the downside of investing, of not investing in people? Well, it's if they stay. So, you know, far worse to have people growing and learning and leaving than people growing, I mean, staying and not growing and you know, not leaving. Then you're just stuck with a stagnant kind of, you know, bunch of people.
Absolutely.
So, Nash, what would you want if you could structure someone who is young and who wants to learn more, who wants to get the experience, who wants to grow themselves? What kinds of things would you like? And let's see how many of those things Nick can say they tick off the list at Clockwork when they put Growth Lab together.
Well, first of all, one of the very first things I think every young person coming into a company should actually be introduced to is actually the possibility of management roles. So actually learning what it takes to actually be in that position, the position of actually basically taking the wheel. Because as I said earlier, it's a thing of most young people are bought in to be pencil pushers, basically, just to work low level and just to basically do the work that nobody else wants to do. And because of that, when they leave, as you mentioned, Nick, when they leave, it's a case of if you did invest in them, then it's horrible. But if you didn't, then it's also horrible, actually, because then you're going to have someone that can't do much in your company. So what I actually want to know is how do you guys specifically benefit people in terms of what they learn from Growth Lab? How would you say you guys actually benefit young people?
So thanks, Mash. I mean, first of all, I made a note of that. So it's nice to get your insight in terms of, you know, and that is a topic that we have looked at. What does management entail? That's actually one of the topics that's on our kind of content list to unpack in time. But I mean, it's a difficult one to answer, and it's one that I think we're answering in time and figuring out. And I'm probing and asking a lot to the young sort of to our Growth Labbers around what do they want, what value do we have to offer you guys. But I think, you know, the main thing is just companies also tend to, there's a big fixation and focus with teaching skills to young people, which is great in the workplace, but I find that sort of happens by doing the work every day and showing up. I think the main value that we try and provide here is how do you grow you as a person. So how do we get people to realize that they can show up with more of their own selves and their own authenticity and, you know, authentic creativity in their roles? How do they bring themselves to work? And that's often about helping support them with, you know, confidence and basically giving them the platform, which is to say, you guys count, you matter. We want you to learn and grow. We want you to tell us what you want to learn and grow about. And as an extra benefit, we get to learn a lot from them. And I think it's incumbent on any business today who works sort of, you know, with any sort of youth oriented market to be connected to young people and to learn and grow from them as well. So in a kind of way, I think we have as much to learn from Growth Lab as Growth Lab has to learn from the seniors in our company, which is something I keep telling our exco as well. So it's a bit of a paradigm shift, but yeah, I think it's helping find direction and just a platform to learn, grow, and have, you know, meaningful conversations around that for them.
One last thing from me. Sorry, go ahead, Mash.
All right. And I do want to say that I do love the fact that you did mention earlier that you do let your members actually choose the themes that they'll be tackling. So that's one thing I actually wanted to say. I actually really, really love that because nowadays it's also a thing of young people are used to getting dictated to all the time. They're not used to actually having a voice and actually speaking out on things that they want to be involved in. So, kudos to that, actually.
Thanks, Mash. And then alongside that, we also elect a new president every quarter. Sorry, Gareth. So the president also, we just elected a new one, and they have to kind of coordinate and run the thing for 3 months. And I'm just there to be like, you know, I'm like a sounding board for ideas, and I'm there to make sure that they can push things through and get things done when they need to and unlock budget for fun things like, you know, lunches and stuff like that. We got to like tempt them with some of the frivolous stuff as well. But it's a whole platform. And I think the presidential sort of leadership of it is also one of the really cool things. And I get to work closely with whoever that is at the time too.
On a much more kind of practical level, do you feel, and I kind of suspect I already know your answer on this one, otherwise you would never have started Growth Lab, But there's a lot of criticism for the younger generation, for millennials, for Gen Zs, for the TikTok generation, as we call them, that these people aren't particularly serious about responsibilities, that they feel very, and again, I'm not speaking for myself here, but this is what people say, you know, and especially in employment circles and in HR, there's a lot of chatter around entitlement all over the world, not just here in South Africa, but all over the world. Entitlement, they want to be the CEO immediately. They want to have all of the bells and whistles, but they don't want to do the hard work. And there isn't this seriousness and this commitment that maybe you get from people who grew up in a generation or two before. Do you think that's fair, or do you think that that's just propaganda?
I don't really buy that perspective. You do hear it a lot. There's a lot of cynicism from sort of, you know, can we describe ourselves as the older generation? I don't know. When people say that, I don't know if they've forgotten what it was like to be 21 or 22. Like, I don't know. I wasn't that serious, and neither was anyone I knew. And I didn't really have a very good understanding of the world and what I could do and what I was owed and not owed and all that stuff. So I think, like, that's part of being young. I think to interpret that through a negative lens is very cynical, and I don't think it's helpful or healthy. I don't think it's really an accurate perspective either. What I see is young people that have a tremendous amount of open-mindedness and appetite to learn, to grow. What I really love about working with Growth Lab in the South African context in particular is a lot of, like, the latent inherited cynicism and, you know, that you see around sort of, you know, doom and gloom apocalypse kind of South African story of, like, everything being terrible and falling apart and, you know, it never going to get better. I don't pick that up with Growth Lab people at all, which is interesting. So I think it's like a generational thing with people in my generation, maybe the one or two generations below me, and then older generations, there's like a bitterness like that is like carried through everything, you know, all the political corruption and disharmony and all this stuff. Right. And I find that stuff, that noise, tiring and kind of like, you know, we get it. Things are tough. Growth Lab members don't seem to carry that. I haven't encountered that. There's far more of, like, we grew up in like a difficult environment. Things aren't perfect. We're not like Norway or Sweden where everything works. We're South Africa, and we're here to, like, grow and learn and do the best with what is, instead of complaining about what isn't. So, I mean, on the contrary to that view, which complains about the youth, I'm quite inspired. And it's one of the personal reasons I love being part of Growth Lab in my capacity, is it helps me stay connected to, like, a hopeful, young sort of worldview. And that helps fight against sort of like the normal stuff that our generation constantly complains about. There's much less optimism in my age group. So I think that's cool, because optimism is a useful thing to, you know, leverage to drive innovation and creativity. So, I they're quite inspiring to me personally.
All right, we're going to have to wrap this up. Nick Simmons is the co-CEO of Clockwork, and we've been talking about Growth Lab, which is the internal way of helping facilitate, develop, grow, and groom the talent of the next generation. It's very, very cool to speak to you, Nick. I hope more companies are doing this stuff, not just the big, huge corporates who feel that they have to tick it off as part of their HR strategy, but the companies that are really making a difference in South Africa, and those successful smaller companies that are able to lead the way because they're nimble and because they actually know the names of all of their staff. They're not just people who are checking in with a number every day. It's really good to speak to you, and thank you for sharing your insights with us. This is useful stuff. I think a lot of people are going to be thinking about this if they haven't already.
Cool, Gareth. Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun. Mash, good to see you. Take it easy, guys. Thanks for having me.
Cool.
Cheers, Nick.
Thank you, Nick. There's Nick Simmons, and that is a wrap on this morning. I hope you've had an awesome day with Mash and I. If you want to send us an email, you can do so. contact@cliffcentral.com. We'd love to hear from you tomorrow. Simpiwe rejoins us. We've got lots of cool guests through the course of this week. You do not want to miss a show going all the way up to Friday. There's plenty of entertainment, information, inspiration, and hopefully a little bit of empowerment like this morning too. So stick around for more of that. Have an excellent day. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Cheers, everybody. cliffcentral.com